Hey guys, thank you so much for stopping by Legend Church's weekly podcast. Just a quick reminder, you can check us out at legendchurch.com, find us on Facebook and Instagram, and Sunday mornings in Madisonville. But hey, without further ado, set the cruise control, start Matt Marun, or grab a drink, and let's talk about all things Jesus.
So we started it a couple weeks ago, this meme series. It's an idea that Jason had been running with for a long time. With when we see memes, if you're my parents' age, you might say memes, but they're memes. If you see a meme, it's always something very familiar that we know, something that we're used to. It's something that we've seen. And 30 years ago in the future, or 30 years in the future, or 30 years in the past, 100 years, whatever, they wouldn't get these memes because they're so relevant to who we are as a culture right now. And so the idea is they put something funny or they put something on it, but we get it because we get the background to it. And so Jason's thought that he led us to a couple weeks ago was this idea is that when we come to the scriptures, we miss so much if we just read it like, well, that's what the Bible says and I'm just reading it and that's how it is. That's where I'm from in the South. That's what they say. Or where Monty's from, either way. That's South, too. I always forget that. There's so much more. Every time we see, especially in the New Testament, when we see something, it's usually a world that they understood, the original readers would have understood, that we have to sort of dig to create. This graphic is so good. Jason put it up. But all the white at the bottom is basically scriptures. New Testament on this side, Old Testament on this side, and every beam is where one thing that's mentioned is referred back to. So it's this idea that when we get to things, especially in the New Testament, man, the it's not written for us, surprise, surprise, not written to us. It's written to a very specific people who understood the memes. And so basically our sermon series has been us just picking out different little memes and having fun with it. So that's where we're going. About 7 or 8 years ago, I took my oldest son, Graydon, to this concert festival called Punk and Drublick. It was just this punk, 90s punk rock, all these bands that I used to listen to. And we got there, and it was like a really fun, dirty festival. And we're sitting there after we saw some bands that we liked. And he goes, he's looking around. He's like, oh, it's a costume. And I was like, what? And he's like, "This." He's like, everyone's wearing a costume. And I was like, oh, yeah, because it's people with, you know, hair worse or the same as mine, but they're spiking it out, and they're wearing these things that we all wore back in the day. And I was like, oh, yeah, it is like a costume. And he's like, why do they wear it? Because everyone there is way older than he was. And I was like, well, it's not a bad thing. It's validation. They wear that band shirt because they want to show, hey, I know the bands that we're talking about. Or I know the dress that we're talking about. Or you know, I know the sports team that we're rooting for, or whatever. There's something about, I do this for validation, to show that I'm in, to show that, yes, I am legitimately into this thing. And we do it all the time. We do it with our social media. We change our picture to whatever the new sort of thing going on is, or the cause. We put on there the causes that we care about. And they're not bad. It's not bad. It's just showing. It's validating, saying, look, I'm into this. So now when you come and see, you know, I'm legitimate. I'm into the thing. I'm authentic. And we do this. And this is different signs that we just add over and over to our lives to sort of say, yes, I'm in. I'm legitimate. I'm authorized. And Stephanie's not here to make fun of, but man, Stephanie would be like, hey, that reminds me of Matthew 12. She's always into the Bible. But Matthew 12, I'm glad you brought it up, guys. This is where we're going today. So I'm going to pull this up and just read through it for a second. So it says, then some of the scribes and Pharisees, and we probably know because we talk about this a lot, the scribes and Pharisees, these are the esteemed elite. So if you're a first century Jew, if you're Jesus, if you're a rabbi, if you're walking around, if you're a fisherman, if you're a tax collector, whatever it is you are, these are the people who are in charge. These are the bosses. These are the presidents. These are the people who, there's no one on top of them outside of Rome, the oppressor. So these are the top. These are the guys who religiously, they study, they're smart, they know, they write, they're scribes. They're not idiots, they're smart, and they are in charge. And so these guys, and they're constantly coming to Jesus. They're constantly coming to Jesus because Jesus started a movement, right? People are following him. He's going, he's doing things. There's rumors. There's overthrowing the government. There's this word Messiah thrown out. Something's happening here. So, of course, they're going to go check it out as often as they can. And so we have there some of the scribes and the Pharisees, the elite. They come to him. They said to him, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you. We want to see a sign. Show us, do your street magic, David Blaine. Like, do the thing." What if he's like, "Is this your phylactery?" That was a Bible joke. You gotta be in. Do a sign. Do something. Man, come on. Do it. You have to legitimize yourself. We need some authentication. You need to prove that you are what you say. I want to see that you're in. I want to see some validation. Do a sign. And he answered to them, "An evil and adulterous generation craves a sign," which I think is the equivalent of two middle fingers. Seriously, not even kidding. Like, this is horrible. You're saying this to the people who make the religious laws, the people in charge of the temple, the people in charge of my belief in God, who give me the guidance, who we go to. You evil person, you adulterous person. Only someone like that would ask for a sign. This is why Jesus gets killed, FYI. It's not because he's such a nice guy who does nice things for people. It's because he says things like this: "We're going to kill you." But he answered to them. He said, "An evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign, and no sign will be given but the sign of Jonah the prophet. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." So his answer is, no sign. You get no sign except for this. And he mentions this thing, right? This Jonah story. We do have a little bit of an advantage because Jonah and the whales, kind of what we say, has become sort of a cultural story for Americans. People generally know this story, this concept. But if we didn't, if we were like, you know, this wasn't written with that in mind, it was the assumption that you knew Jonah. Jonah's the meme here, man. You knew exactly what he was saying. Jesus does this a lot. When he first comes into Jerusalem, he goes to a temple and he stands up to talk to all the leaders and he just reads from Isaiah. If you're reading it as us, as a 21st century person, you read it. He reads it from the scroll of Isaiah, puts the scroll down and sits down and they're all like, "What?" And so if we're reading it, we should be like, "Well, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. What's the story behind Isaiah? We'd have to go look." And it's the same here. He just mentions this story real quick of Jonah. And he's like, "This is the only sign that you're going to get." And so we get to ask the question, where does this go? There's a podcast that Jason and I like. He mentioned it last week. If church was over and there was we couldn't do church together anymore, I would probably listen to Mission House and listen to the Bible Project, and that would be my church. They're really good. And they do a whole thing. I think the guy who runs it, he did a whole like master's thesis on Jonah. But he would say that this entire story of Jonah is the entirety of all you need to know. If you lived as an ancient Jew or ancient Hebrew, or even in the first century, the Jonah story has given you everything you need to know about God, everything you need to know about the history of Israel and where it goes. Like, it's a big story. And unfortunately, we've turned it into a children's story. I think about this probably way more than I should, but I always process what we do, and not just we as legend, but we as churches, with children and how we teach them the Bible, because we turn things into these little moral stories, these little cute, "Oh, Jonah and the whale, it's cute," and then make sure you go do your things. Like, and man, Jason and I, not too long ago, sat down with a grown man who was like, "Well, you know, the Bible is just a bunch of fun moral stories for us all, and it's cute." And I don't have a poker face, so Jason's almost kicking me on the table because I'm just like, "Wow, this is disgusting." Like, I would rather you hate the Bible, say it's dumb and it's stupid, I don't want it. That makes sense to me. But man, it just means, you don't even know, man. And it's not full of cute moral stories. And we've turned, and we do that a lot with children's stories. And not that I think we do it out of good hearts to try to teach something. When my children were younger, We outlawed children's Bibles in our house because I was like, hey, the art's really dumb. I was like, where's the blood and gore and hairy arms? The stories were just there. So we just told them. But the Jonah story, I kind of have a game we're going to play. It's more of a Mad Lib. That has one of three outcomes. It could be super funny. It's probably not. It could be super lame. And it could be super inappropriate, so your answers are going to make that not happen. If you don't know how Mad Libs work, you will learn in a second. But I just want you guys need to throw something out. First one I hear, someone name an occupation.
Librarian.
A noun that's plural. Goats. What?
Goats.
Goats. Oh, okay. Something alive that's plural. Aardvarks. An adjective.
Me.
Me? Is it me an adjective? Oh, what is it?
Pot.
Pot? Hot. Okay, gotcha. I also was not sure what adjectives were. I was like, if me's one, I'm putting it down. I don't know. Form of transportation, go.
Car.
Oh, we are not thinking of really creative today. Just an action verb, something you can do.
Fight.
Fight? You would say that. Noun.
Skateboard.
Another noun.
Turtle.
A noun that's plural.
Hats.
An occupation plural. We're almost done.
Turtler.
A turtler? Like I gather and collect turtles. I get it. A turtler. I like it. Something large.
Tortoise.
Tortoise. We're really into amphibians. An emotion.
Mad.
All right. A noun that's plural. We're doing something else other than turtles.
Ovaries.
All right. All right, I'm going. I knew we'd get like this. It's you can't. We can't with our church not. Something that starts with W.
Wind.
I heard wind.
Wind.
An action verb.
Wrestle.
Something alive. Plants. A number. A body part.
Elbow.
Four more. Verb, something you can do to someone.
Kill.
Noun.
Chairs.
Adjective.
Purple.
And is that an adjective? Is that an adjective? Okay, either someone said that's not, and I was like, okay, I believe everyone. And then last one, a number.
17.
Okay, here we go. Ready? It's the story of Jonah. A long time ago, there was a librarian named Jonah. His job was to bring goats to the people. One day, God told Jonah to go to the aardvarks of Nineveh and tell them to stop being bad and start being hot. Jonah didn't want to go, so he headed in the opposite direction, got on a car, and tried to fight away from God. After a while, a huge skateboard came up, and the turtle was blowing, and the hats were crashing, and the turtlers were very afraid. Jonah knew, that makes sense, it works actually. No, Jonah knew that it was his fault and he asked them to throw him into the turtles. They didn't want to, but things kept getting worse, so finally they agreed. Immediately everyone stopped and was calm. The people were mad and they gave ovaries to God for saving them. Meanwhile, Jonah was sinking down into the wind, about to wrestle, but God sent a plant. Which, oh my gosh, this really happened. Swallowed Jonah. Jonah spent 3 days in its elbow praying and thanking God for saving him. After a while, the creature killed Jonah onto the dry chairs, and this time Jonah went straight to Nineveh to do what God had told him to do. The Ninevites listened to Jonah and started being purple. God had given them a 17th chance. This was just as he had with Jonah. And that is basically the same as the children's Bible stories. It's not different. Like, you read them and you're like, this is not what this is about. Like, this is not this story. And in the story, there is there's violence. There's just something way bigger. When Jonah's thrown into the, Jason went through it last week, the waters are chaos and depth and darkness, and he's thrown into this darkness. And then the sea beast, or Jason's sermon last week, the sea dragon takes him. Man, you at this point in the imagination of the Hebrews, you have been thrown into the depths. You've been thrown into Sheol. You've been thrown into the dark. You've been captured by the sea beast. And not to mention, when he gets to Nineveh, man, at the very last paragraph of the entire book is Jonah suicidal. He's done. He's mad, and he wants to kill himself. Like, this is the story. And that part's never in the children's books. It's like, come on, guys. But it's this big story that when Jesus mentions it here, there's something that as a 21st audience, we just don't, 21st century audience, we just don't get all the way, and we have to go and read the story. Man, where is this going? Why did they tell this? Why do we know? Why does anyone know this story? And so Jesus' answer, they're saying, hey, we need a sign. Show us. Give us the thing, man. Do the street magic. And he says, no, you get no sign but the sign of Jonah. You get no sign but the sign of Jonah. So this idea is that to the religious leaders is that you've lost the plot. You've lost the meaning of what's happening here. You cannot see what I'm doing. Man, how many Christian people in the world right now would you go? And I mean, maybe Jesus would even come to me and say, dude, you have lost the plot of what's really happening here. Because he says, this is all you get. You get this sign. You want me to heal. You want me to do fantastic things. And you get a sign of 3 days in darkness. 3 days buried. 3 days. My sign is that I am going to be murdered. I'm going to go hang on a cross as an enemy of the state. I'm going to die. Like, that's the sign that you get. It's not all these other things. And so Jesus brings this up. Man, this is the sign you get. You get the sign of Jonah. Let's talk for a second about signs. If you were reading that part in Matthew chapter 12 and you flip back a couple pages, you get to see a scene where there's this guy that has leprosy, which you wouldn't go near. He's unclean. But Jesus goes to him, and the guy says, can you hear me? And Jesus heals his leprosy. And Jesus says, do not tell anyone about this. Just don't tell anyone. Go do what you need to do. Don't tell anyone. Chapter later, there's two blind men come up to Jesus, like, oh, son of David, have mercy on us. And Jesus heals them. And what does he say? Do not tell anyone about this, which is super bad PR. If you're coming to try to be the Messiah and you're trying to be this thing, he should be like, go tell everybody and make sure they know. And he doesn't. Don't tell anyone. And then this happens. I love this thing. It's Matthew 11, 16. Oh, I forgot my Patrick meme. I was trying to find some Jonah and the whale memes. And this is one I found, which was cute. There's a lot. And if you're online, just Google Jonah and the whale memes. I didn't know what weast meant. I looked up to make sure it wasn't inappropriate because it sounds inappropriate. But it's just some SpongeBob thing. Anyways, has nothing to do. I should have mentioned it earlier. But this next verse. Thanks, guys, up top. Man, Jesus says this to them. And he's talking to the religious leaders. And he says, but to what shall I compare this generation? It's like children sitting in the marketplaces who call out to the other and say, we played the flute for you and you did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not mourn. For John the Baptist, came neither eating nor drinking. And they said, he has a demon. And the Son of Man, is Jesus a name for himself, he came eating and drinking. And what do you say? Behold, this gluttonous man who's a drunkard and a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds. There's another meme there, wisdom being a female. We get that from Proverbs. But Jesus comes to them. He's like, man, you want a sign. Man, we played the flute and you didn't dance. We played the dirge. You didn't mourn. Like, I've done these things and it's not going to matter. So you see that Jesus heals the leper, heals the blind man. There's a scene where he feeds 5,000. If you want a cool take on the feeding the 5,000, you know you've heard the story of the multiplying the bread and fish. Rob Bell has a take that I really like. But he thinks the real miracle there is that the rich shared with the poor, and at the end, we didn't just have enough, but we had abundance. I don't know if that's true for what the Bible writers were doing, but it's really good. I like that. But he fed 5,000. There's a scene where Lazarus, right? Lazarus is raised from the dead. But the irony is after the 5,000 are fed, they're going to be hungry that night, or they're hungry the next day. Lazarus is going to die again. People who are healed can get diseases. That signs are fleeting, and they don't matter. I think that's why Jesus was like, man, don't tell, because they don't matter. And he knew that they're not going to matter to these people who are demanding a sign. They're just reprieves. They're just things. They're just small fixes that get you from one thing to the next. It's momentary. And actually, there's a, I stole this from somebody, but I love it. It's called, he calls it the Batman fixes, with the idea that Batman is in Gotham and he can fix a bank robbery or can save someone from being assaulted. But Gotham's a big city and the world's a big world, and there are other bank robberies happening. And the next day when he gets up, there's more and more and more. And he's never going to heal the world. He's never going to fix it, because there's a system in place that makes bank robberies still happen and people still get assaulted. And he's just going from one fix to the next fix to the next fix. And that's what our signs do, because in the end, people are still hungry. Jesus says, you don't get signs. You get this sign of Jonah. I'm going into the beast itself. I'm going into darkness, into death, and I'm going to come out the other side. And so where this fits, I think, for us, is that we do a very good job of living by signs, that there is our loss, our not enoughness, our feelings of unworthiness, our darkness, our failures, and we live just in front of them, and we live just enough. We have just enough signs to keep us in front of this. We've learned how, if I work hard, that pays off. If I achieve, if I hustle, if I stay ahead, if I am the first one in, the last one out, I make sure that our kids are achieving. I do these things in my life to validate, and they feed the ego. Man, this feels good. And it keeps the darkness just at bay. It keeps the pain and the loss. And so we get these signs, these validations in our life. Maybe you're at work and someone says, hey, that's a really good job. You did a good job, and you get recognized. But man, next time you don't get recognized. Or someone compliments you, and that feels good. But what about the next time? Or you get a pay raise, and then we adjust our standard of living to we're still living paycheck to paycheck. We get these little validations, these little signs that say, yes, I'm doing okay in the world. And it keeps everything, all the darkness and all our pain and things that we don't want to deal with, we'd stay just in front of it. And we're good at doing that. But Jesus comes and he says, man, he says, do you really want to live, is what he's asking. This isn't a question. I think what we've done modern church folk is we've turned this thing about Jonah. Hey, you only get the sign of Jonah 3 days in. We're like, oh, that's what he's talking about, his death. And he's talking about dying. And it kind of is, but not in the way we think. And we just want to ask, well, you either believe it or don't believe it. And so Jesus isn't doing some sort of believe or not believe thing. He's telling them there is a different way to live here. There is a different way. There's a different mode that isn't about signs. And he says, I'm about to die. I'm going to die. And I'm going to die to your whole entire system that demands signs anyways. I'm going to die, and I'm going to go into death. I'm going to go into darkness, and I'm going to come out the other side, and that's where life is. Maybe imagine like a business, and the business is great. Everything looks good. They're achieving. They got their slogan on the wall. From a big standpoint, it looks great. But in the inside, you have your sales team arguing with your marketing team, and you have people on the factory floor who think the CEOs don't get it, and there's just all this inner turmoil. But we stay in like this, hey, everything's fine, with looking at the big picture. But when we sit and deal with the issues, things work. We do it with marriages. Everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine. We're cool. Because there's past and there's histories and there's other things going on that sometimes we don't want to talk about. And so we just look for the good. Oh, we had a good night tonight. Oh, we had a good day today. Oh, man, this is good. And we live on these signs and these fixes, these validations that things are going to be okay. We do it within our families. If you're a student, you do it at school sometimes. This worked out. And what Jesus is telling us the entire time in this story is that we have to stop demanding signs, stop looking for validations, stop looking for, like, look, I'm doing it right. And we turn around and we go into the mouth of the beast. We deal and we name our things. We name our failures. We name where we messed up. We look at the business and say, this is what's going on. Maybe it's with a glass of wine outside, but with your spouse or significant other, having a conversation about what's going on in our families. Because we look for signs and validations that, okay, yes, it's going good. And Jesus says, no, the way to live is that you dive right into your stuff, into your darkness, into your, as Jason said last week, your chaos dragon, and deal with it. And then, man, we come out the other side. Death and resurrection. That's what, just this whole thing, man. It's death and resurrection. It is the, as Monty was saying today, it is the natural course of our entire world. Things die so that they can come back to life. The seasons, everything falls and dies and it comes back new. I think in an hour, we've lost 300 billion cells. And in an hour, your body has made 300 billion new cells. Like, this is the way of the world. And Jesus says, man, you're living this life. You're living this life that's demanding signs, demanding validation. And he's like, no, the way of the world, the way to really live is to die to that. The first shall be last, man. Like, we die to that. We go and we name our issues, we name our pain, we name our loss, we name our failure, we wrestle through it, and we come out the other side stronger, better equipped to live in the world, better equipped to grow. This is the sign of Jonah. This is where we go. Things cannot arise new until they die. That is just how it works. And Jesus looks at these guys and says, man, there's a different way to operate, and you're not doing it, and we die to those systems and raise new. The band's going to come up in a second, and we're going to go through communion, but man, this is death and resurrection, right? This, we come and we take bread, and we dip it in juice, and we reflect, and we all probably have our different practices that we do with this, but the whole idea is that there is death and resurrection, and if we're not constantly experiencing the death of old things, old habits, old ways, old systems that we run our family, old systems that we run our relationships, if we're not digging in into the darkness, dealing with things, naming things, saying, yes, that's it, and let's go, then we don't get to resurrection. So this is Jesus, man. We come, and as you can come anytime when the band plays a song. But man, what needs to die? Where do you need to turn around and go into the belly of the fish and sit in darkness and deal with the things that we have to deal with so that we come out resurrected, so that we come out in the light. I'm going to pray, and then we'll sing a song. God, sometimes I think I'm the only one who has so much weird darkness that I have to deal with. But I know that's not true, and I know it's not even remotely true for some of us. There are things, I want to be a growing person. I want to be someone who is not succeeding on what the world thinks I should look like with monies and jobs and things and blahs, but that I'm a healthy person who gets to be about your good work, to do good things, to say good things, to be the human that you want me to be. And thank you for Jesus that I get to follow that one. And Lord, help me to die to my ego, die to my pride, die to my sense of value and only find new value, new worthiness in how you see me. So help me to name my stuff. Help me to have the conversations I need to have the moments I need to not keep running from one fix to the next, from one sign to the next. That the sign of Jonah is a sign of dying to things. Help me do that. Help us as a church do that. Help us do that so that we are stronger, that we're more connected, that we're more encouraging, that we're more loving. Man, I pray these things because I believe you can help us. In Jesus' name, I pray.